Hello, I'm Adrian Daub.
And I'm Moira Donegan.
Whether we like it or not, we're in bed with the right.
So, Adrian, today, before we dig in, I have a question for you.
Shoot.
Does your AI agent need a workflow engine?
This is a good question, and it's one that I keep getting asked. People are asking. It's all I know. Yes, what Moira is alluding to, that is the first line of my forthcoming book, What Tech Calls Governing. And it is a sentence that really stopped me, well, not dead in my tracks because I saw it on a highway billboard, but it might have, and it would have been dangerous if I had stopped and been like, oh God, does it? Do I need an AI agent? Does it have such an engine? Like, oh God, oh God, oh God.
Your AI agent is lonely, or
yeah,
its
exactly.
Workflow is not engined.
I know, poor AI agent.
For our listeners who might justifiably be wondering what the fuck we're talking about,
yeah.
This is an episode about the 101 corridor. So this is something I want to explain to people who do not live in the Bay Area, because there's a few uncanny things about living in San Francisco, as Adrian and I do, and working on the peninsula that is sometimes referred to as Silicon Valley. But what we're talking about today is a strip of highway between San Jose in the south and San Francisco in the north, along this little peninsula of land on the west side of the San Francisco Bay and east of the Pacific Ocean, on a highway called Highway 101.
It goes through the towns in which most of the big tech companies of the last 10 to 15 years sit. And part of it is named, I don't know if you know this, it's the Fred Terman Highway. It's named after the provost who first sort of brought incubators, startups, and VC money to Stanford University, provost of Stanford, yeah, a dean of the School of Engineering, I believe, in the 50s and early 60s. This may sound extremely local, and it kind of is, but this is where sort of our digital future is engineered and where, frankly, a lot of the rightward lurch of the last 5 to 10 years has also originated, right?
Yeah, and I think part of what we're doing in this episode is taking this strip of highway and this sort of like physical and intellectual terrain that is quote-unquote Silicon Valley. And we're going to try to use some of the artifacts that we encounter there to explain what has happened in our politics and our economy and the ideologies that are governing both over the past 10 years or so.
That's right. So let me set the scene for people. The most obvious feature of Highway 101 is, I would say, it has no features. It's literally just the highway. Everything's very flat. There's salt flats on one side sometimes. And then there's like, because these towns tend to be pretty wealthy, there's sound barriers. So you're just kind of driving through. The second most obvious feature, though, are the billboards. And this is where I encountered the fact that my AI agent needs a workflow engine. You've noticed these, right? Was that the first thing you noticed when you drove down to Stanford for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, we touched on this in our very popular episode on San Francisco in the conservative imagination. But in San Francisco, generally, and really on this strip of highway on the 101 in particular, the billboards you see are not like normal billboards you see on a typical American highway, right? Like you'll see a big billboard that's like Wendy's and six exits, or you'll see one that's like, these are amazing caverns. You'll see like a lot of like repent and like don't have an abortion billboards. Those are big in like middle America and the South.
Yeah.
These are not like that. These are not advertising to normal people driving their cars who might have like normal budgets and normal needs and responsibilities. These are billboards almost exclusively for products that can be sold by one tech company to another tech company.
Yeah, it's like over the driver's head, like metaphorically, but also literally. These are just like different companies talking to each other about like things that you as a normal consumer are very unlikely. Like, oh, yes, I do need that. Like there are iPhone ads. There are ads for like services you could potentially subscribe to, but it's gotten less and less over the years. And really more, your paradigmatic experience with one of these billboards is like, oh, wait, I'm not I'm not the CEO of a $100 million company. This isn't for me.
Yeah. So we have our, like, does your AI agent need a workflow engine? That surrealistly incomprehensible sentence.
Beautiful. Just beautiful. I still don't know what it advertises. I deliberately didn't write down the company, and fuck you guys. I'm not going to learn.
I don't know what any of those words mean.
Yeah.
But like, we also have a couple of other ones. Do you want to like read off another couple of these billboards so people can get a sense of just how uncanny this is?
So picture yourselves driving down the highway, and here's what you see. Together.ai, the AI Nation Cloud. Render, deploy, scale, win. Code is temporary. Workflow is durable. I mean, that's good advice. enterprise AI is invented here. So I guess like that's probably targeted at people who are driving in from the airport or something like that. It's like, why would you tell me that, right? Like, it's like going to Detroit. It's like, hey, we're known for our cars. Like, yeah, I fucking know, man. And then another one that's often on a lot of buses in San Francisco, which I think is the fucking funniest thing. Because like, sure, if you're waiting for a Muni bus, what you want to really consider is the question, are your APIs ready for AI agents? Are they, Moira? Are they?
No idea what any of those words mean, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not supposed to,
yeah.
Right? These are billboards that are self-consciously and sometimes kind of like winkingly and deliberately,
yeah,
very exclusive.
And they kind of exploit the fact that like our tech elite, who this is aimed at, and a very specific subset of that, move in fairly predictable paths through this Bay Area. So there are particular ads that are in Palo Alto as you head north, just north of the IKEA. And the reason for this is that across from the IKEA sits this complex that has a bunch of law firms that do work for, you know, lots of tech companies. And there's a bunch of investment companies there, and there's the Four Seasons. Meaning that clearly someone cheeky at one of these companies rented the billboard thinking like, yeah, our investor is going to wake up in the morning, brush their teeth, look outside the window, and we'll be like, haha, we put a billboard there, right? Like the fact that these people move through that space that they give its name to, the Silicon Valley, right? That they move through it in extremely predictable ways, also sort of encoded in this, that this is actually a very small group of people, and that small group of people is fairly lemming-like and fairly similar in the way they occupy this space, right? They show up in the same places, they go through the same kind of rituals and rhythms, like cicadas.
So these billboards are aimed at a very small number of people who are this tech elite. Tell me who those people are. What is the demographic that these billboards are aiming for? What do they look like? How do they vote? How do they spend their time?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I honestly don't know the answer. I mean, I'm guessing this is between each of these companies and whoever fucking designed these incomprehensible signs. But here's a few things we can say. So I took this drive down to Palo Alto and back with writer Wendy Liu, who has been on the beat of these billboards for years. These have been around. We can talk about their history, but like this is sort of a good place to sort of take the temperature of Silicon Valley. And it is just a very, very obvious place to start. And we were kind of starting to think like, who is this for? You might think like, oh, it's for tech workers. Well, or for tech people. You and I have lived here long enough to know that that's not a very sharp definition of anything.
Yeah, I mean, you say tech people, and that can mean a 30-year-old software engineer who's making like $120,000 a year. And I don't particularly think of that person as like the proletariat, you know? But she is very different from your Mark Zuckerbergs, your Elon Musks, and even the people like two or three rungs below them on an org chart, right?
Yeah.
There's a like kind of generalized wealth in San Francisco. It's really hard to afford to live here. You can see it in the culture, the atmosphere, the sort of businesses that are able to survive here. It's very clear that there's a much wealthier local group and then sort of a ring of the actual workers who serve them. But then that's very different,
yeah,
from the strata of elite that these billboards are going to, which are people in like high management positions at these companies, like sort of the top tier tech executives.
Well, I'm not even sure it's tech, right? So like that's one possibility. It could be people in the upper echelon of these tech companies. On the other hand, one thing you notice is these billboards are fucking inscrutable. There's one that just says caffeine, and you have to kind of look really closely, much closer than you should if you're driving on 101, to find out that it's for a company called Caffeine AI. So it's not for it's for people who are being driven down there, which already kind of excludes most actual workers at these companies. And I think even someone who's on one of the famous Google buses, they are all like on their laptops typing. Like, they're not going to be like, oh, Caffeine AI, oh, great, right? It's really for someone who's in the back of a limo, maybe an Uber, maybe eventually a Waymo, right? Like, this is something that you're seeing out of the back of a car while you're being driven and you're not working. And I think that already tells you something, right? The other thing is, like, it may not even be for people in the tech industry. It may well be for the people who invest in these things. A lot of these companies are right now, as best as I can tell, mostly huge investment vehicles, right? They do stuff in the sense that they clearly develop large language models, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of what they seem to spit out are these big press releases. Like, they're like, we're frightened of how good our technology is. And people are like, oh, they're frightened of how good their technology is, right? And then they're like, oh, and by the way, also our next round of funding is coming up. It's like, oh, this is, yeah, what a weird coincidence. So I do think this is more of a pitch from one arm of Silicon Valley to the other. It's part of these technology companies positioning themselves for the money people. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, Wendy and I got talking about this, and the thing that kind of kept coming back for me was, imagine I'm like a VC or something like that in Silicon Valley. And imagine I was investing your money and you're like, oh, you think I should invest in Caffeine AI? How come? And I'm like, well, I saw their billboard on the highway. You're like, you're fired. You're terrible at your job. What do you mean? You saw it on the fucking highway. It's like, next you're going to like make me invest in repent.com and like a strip club, right? It feels weird, right? Like, no one who thinks of themselves as a savvy investor is like, well, if it's on a billboard, then...
Yeah, but it also feels like part of its appeal is that only a few people can understand it, right? Like, part of what they're selling actually is their own eligibility, right?
That's right.
Like, I'm using keywords that you know are shibboleths, that you know indicate a membership in this elite group that you're very proud to be a part of, right? So that's part of what's going on, is that it's not just any billboard.
Yeah.
It's a billboard that is very conspicuous and self-conscious about the fact that it's not like other billboards.
Yeah.
That it's not for other people.
Exactly. And I think that's why I wanted to talk about this today. Because these billboards say something about what tech calls governing. Because these billboards kind of do two things, right? They are, on the one hand, claims to dominance, right? They're not saying, hey, invest in us. They're saying, we are already important. And if you don't get that, you're not important, right? If these shibboleths don't make sense to you, you don't matter, right?
Yeah.
Mattering is understanding what I am trying to communicate to you. I run your life and you don't even understand me. That's the claim of these billboards. But that's a kind of a peculiar claim. We can talk about that more. But the second thing is, I think you're exactly right. Part of what's sold here is the exclusivity. And that's actually kind of characteristic for AI, if you think about it. Like, I've been around the tech industry and I've been around San Francisco since 2008. And I remember a time when technology was supposed to be anti-elitist and anti-exclusive, right? When in fact, that's what made it so scary in some way, right? Like, all my friends are now on this platform. Oh, that platform's just going to take over anyway because it's so incredibly convenient and it's just better than what came before. And like, you know, we're all going to be writing on Substack instead of writing for the newspaper because it's just so much more convenient, et cetera, et cetera. We're all going to buy Amazon because that's better than shopping at a brick and mortar store. That was inclusive. In fact, what made these companies kind of uncanny in their success was like this kind of pod people syndrome where you're like, well, I wouldn't use that. And then you turn around, like two of your best friends were using it. And they're like, you should get on it. It's really good, actually.
Yeah.
I feel a little sheepish about it, but I'll do it. This is not that. This is the opposite of that, right? AI, and I think AI in general works that way. It never really sells you, at least I've never seen an ad that really sells you on like, hey, this is fun. You're going to have fun. The two pitches are, it's coming anyway, so you might as well get fucking with it. And the other is like, it's coming for you. You need to kind of buck up and like submit to it in some way.
So you're identifying these two strains of Silicon Valley ethos that are emerging in these billboards as being like domination, like we're more important than you, we're fancier than you, we're showing you that we're better than you, and we're showing ourselves that we're members of this group through these inscrutable billboards.
Yeah.
And then the second one is inevitability. It's not like we're persuading you. It's not we're going to make your life better. It's not we're doing something for everybody. It's fuck you, this is coming whether you like it or not. And we're going to kind of like revel in our ability to inflict it on you, even if you don't like it, even if it takes your job away, what have you.
Exactly. I think that that's really key.
And this strikes me as a change from what Silicon Valley used to be like, right? This is not like Mark Zuckerberg, oh, Instagram and Facebook, we're going to connect the whole world and it's going to be kumbaya. You know, that's a different vibe. So what did Silicon Valley used to be like? And how do we see how it has changed through these billboards?
Yeah, and I guess there we have to be very careful about what we mean by Silicon Valley, but I do think those billboards are a pretty good deep core sample for that cross-section, which is companies that both are beloved by investors. Otherwise, you wouldn't do this. If you were some kind of very hyper-specialized tech manufacturer who only really needs to market to specialists, you're not going to buy this billboard. It's for ones that kind of have to work the refs a little bit, have to maybe work regulators a little bit, which is true for AI as well, and has to kind of persuade politicians as well as the general public. You know, these billboards have always been kind of inside baseball-y in their tendencies, but there was definitely a moment when you could tell what it was selling you. If you'd taken that drive like 5 to 10 years ago, it would have been some social media ads, not a ton. It would have been some ads for things like CRM, so customer relations management, which again is not aimed at you and me, but like, you know, mid-sized companies use these, small companies use these. So you could see like that's a somewhat larger group of people. And in each case, the pitch was convenience. It's very much in the mode of American consumerism. It's like, we've identified this problem that we've decided you have and that you may or may not actually have. And here's the thing that's going to fix it, right?
Yeah, the tone of those ads, even the ones that are for like, I don't know, some Salesforce product that a lot of mid-level employees might be using, they have like a kind of cheerful populism in the tone of the ad, right? It's like, hey, we all have this problem. Like, what's the deal with airline food? Now we have this stupid startup that can give you a better, you know, snack at the airport or whatever the fuck it is. It's a sense of reaching for relatability is the difference.
Exactly. It's so fascinating if you think about the big shift here really is away from any kind of solicitousness. And I really can't emphasize enough, I really do recommend that people who visit the Bay Area ever really spend some time looking at these. They're also there in San Francisco. You can find them on bus stops as well, but really make the drive. These are bleak fucking advertisements, right? Like, it's a lot of warning, a lot of, it's one that's weird about like, you have AI read to your kids and you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm not having AI. I wouldn't even know how to have AI reading to my kids. It's like, it's a dark, scary world that they're conjuring.
They're visually unpleasant, right? Like, they tend to be a minimalist design that almost seems like it's ostentatious about having been done by AI, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's
just a black background with white sans serif writing.
Yeah.
Like, very big. Or sometimes they'll do another pop of color, usually like traffic cone yellow, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just solid background, plain writing. Almost all the time.
Yeah.
Like, very rarely will there be the kind of like pretty pictures that are designed to draw a human eye.
Yeah. Like the classic San Francisco billboard back in the day, they still exist, but they were more ubiquitous 5 years ago, are these very high res, beautiful travel pictures that say shot on an iPhone.
Or like Airbnb. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And you're like, oh, I wanna stay there. I wanna have that camera and I wanna be able to take that awesome picture of Bora Bora. Well, these ads seem to be telling you, be afraid. They're saying,
right,
you don't want to end up here, right? Like, you don't want to end up on the wrong end of me.
Yeah, there was one ad on the side of the Muni bus stop, not far from my apartment, like a couple blocks, for a long time, like months it was there. And it was just a black background with white font that said, humanity had a good run.
Yeah.
That's the tone. It's like, it's a little sarcastic, but it's like, oh, we're not humans anymore. Like, all those things that you thought made you human are now obsolete and replaced by machines. And it's like, they all read like quotes from a villain's monologue in a children's movie.
Yeah,
you know what I
right.
mean? Like, it's so over the top. And yeah, you're right. They're very bleak. They're incredibly cynical.
And that's, if you think about it, that is true for the entire AI boom. The entire pitch is always, you have to get ahead of it or else it'll fucking kill you.
But it's not just like you have to get ahead of it or else it'll kill you. Like there's some of that like ominous warning tone, but there's also like, it's going to kill you. Nah, 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 nah. There's also this like petulant kind of like smugness in some of these.
It's true, but it is still an ad and it's probably supposed to make someone do something. And I do think that there is this tendency with AI, right? Like I'm sure different listeners have gotten this talk from a manager of some kind. Well, it's here whether we like it or not. And now we have to deal with it. Yeah. And that is the sales pitch of these companies themselves. That's not your middle manager saying that. That's actually the companies are, well, it's coming. So, you know.
It's like when your sister marries an asshole and you're like, well, now he's part of the family, whether I like it or not. I just have to deal with him. Or like if you get sick and you have to take antibiotics that give you really gnarly diarrhea. Like that's the pitch of AI.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is, you know?
Yeah. Ass spraying mayhem.ai.
But like, okay, so this is the pivot we're seeing. The tech world used to see the general public as its customers.
Yeah.
And increasingly that's not true.
Yeah.
And accordingly, they are also sort of shifting from this polite, like sneaker clad optimism of like the Obama era tech world, which like I saw The Social Network. I have no illusions about what that era was actually like, but they definitely were like pretending to be something different, right?
Yeah.
And now they're like, mwahahaha, like cackling, right? They've shifted their tone a lot in this way that I don't know what it does. Is it just like indexing the vibe of the smaller and smaller number of tech oligarchs who run this industry and this country now, who are like more and more red-pilled and drug-addled and weird in their like wealthy isolation? Or is it, do they think they're charting a cultural vibe shift? I don't know. What do they think?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's definitely true that like a lot of these companies thought they could lean into populism, but they've been ground up by their own populism, right? Like it turns out, they wanted to be a bunch of things to a bunch of people. They wanted to be unusual companies, atypical companies. But in the end, you know, they're companies that are just as scared about losing market share as anyone else. And they made a bet on right-wing politics in many cases because it promised less of the regulation they didn't want, right? Antitrust stuff, Elizabeth Warren stuff, and more of the regulation they didn't really give a shit about, which was kicking people off of social media for posting things about Gaza or whatever, right? Like, they were like, well, that's fine. That's all right. We can live with that. So giving up on this populism, I think a lot of these companies and really parts of its investor class, that's very, very important, have embraced a kind of almost seigneurial system, a kind of almost feudal system.
I don't know, seigneurial. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's this, like you get to watch someone be dominant, but it's not because they're trying to convince you of joining them. You're like, oh, you don't matter. Like a peon on my farm. I don't care whether you greet me or not. I don't care whether you respect me or not. Like that's not what this is about. This is about recognition of my dominance and that's it.
This is a question I have for you as somebody who's a little more integrated into San Francisco than I am. Partly you've just lived here longer, but partly I've also just been like, I find the tech stuff so depressing that I really try to keep my head down. I try to be in San Francisco without being of San Francisco, if that makes sense.
Good luck, man.
When anybody starts talking about their app job, I just sort of like glaze over and like find a way to exit the conversation.
Oh, I work for Palantir. Oh, was ICE busy?
Like we were walking, Adrian and I were walking past a bakery on our way to get coffee. And we heard this guy outside the bakery talking in kind of like annoyingly condescending terms to an old lady about long-termism. And I was like, get me out of here. You know, I was like, get me back on a plane to New York. But like, I try to not engage with that stuff. Right. But you have spent a lot more time hobnobbing with the rich of this part of the country because of your fundraising responsibilities. You spent a lot more time thinking about tech by virtue of having been here longer and also having written about it. So something I wonder when I'm looking at these billboards is like, to what degree does this change in how the tech world presents itself from this like sunny optimism of the neoliberal Obama era to this like really cynical, really dark, really dominance-based, malignant irony of the Trump era? To what degree is that a change of the actual guys at the top? Is that like that the elites have been, you know, like having their brains cooked online or by the sycophants who surround them? Is this something that's changed in the culture of Silicon Valley? Like, what's going on here? How have these people changed?
Yeah, and we should say that, like, we're not making any claims about the actual technology of AI because I don't know the first thing about it. I'm guessing you don't either. And that being said, there's something very specific that happens when people talk about AI, its threats, its promises, how inevitable it is, et cetera, which is not about the technology itself. It seems to be almost like a stalking horse for things that they would like to be true. I always think of the fact that, like, the number one thing that's gonna be negatively affected by AI tools is entry coder jobs. And everyone in Silicon Valley who's at the managerial level knows this and talks about this. But when you turn on TV or when you listen to our media, you would think that the number one threat of AI is that it's going to hurt, you know, writers, teachers, and nurses. And it's like, well, no, that's because the people who kind of like AI think that it would be great if someone took teachers, nurses, and writers down a peg and don't feel that way about coders, even though we're still telling people to learn to code. It's like, that appears to be a bad piece of advice right now, unfortunately. So when we talk about AI in public discourse, it's not the technology itself. It really is a political function about, like, it's almost a moral calculus, almost a way of mapping our social world and understanding who matters, who's on top, who deserves what, how are things allocated. And I do think that the way Silicon Valley, especially this upper echelon of dude, talks about AI is an index of, as you were saying, elite radicalization. If they hadn't invented AI, the actual technology, they would have had to invent at least the word, because what it allows them to do is to communicate who does and doesn't matter, who is and who is not disposable. And the bad news is that a lot of us are disposable.
Yeah, AI seems to be the buzzword for we hate white collar workers, right?
Yeah,
it's like, like all that knowledge economy, all the people that are less powerful than your Mark Zuckerbergs and your Elon Musks, but like do have the capacity to annoy them by, say, organizing in their tech companies for unionization efforts or like Black Lives Matter efforts or Me Too efforts, as they all did over the past 10 years, right? Like those people are going to be eliminated from the workforce from Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and Sam Altman's like reliance on them.
I think that's exactly right. And that's an important material shift that's taken place over the last 10 years, right? Like the top echelon of a lot of these companies has manifestly moved to the right. That has not been true for the rank and file, even up to like, you know, probably like the CFO or whatever. Like, this is still the Bay Area. Like San Mateo County, which is where half of Silicon Valley is, went like 76% for Kamala Harris. I think in Santa Clara County it was like 80%. Like this is heavily left-leaning.
Yeah. It's Chavez numbers. It's like, it's like we are blowing through. Yeah. And they do have to interact with those people to some degree, right?
Well, although they're all leaving too. Like none of them live here anymore. That's the interesting thing. But I think you're exactly right that like over the last 10 years, these are companies that always told their employees, especially the most well-heeled and the, let's say, most knowledge worker segment of them, they always told them, hey, we're not a regular company. We're on a mission. We're a family, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually people saw through that shit and were like, no, we're a company and here are some things we like and don't like, right? And some of this could be just about creaturely things. Like a lot of these were young people who got older and were like, I want to spend time with my kids. Sorry. Like I'm not coming in at 4 a.m. for your fucking meeting. This is insane. I'm not doing laundry at work. I'm going to go home and do laundry because I'm a fucking adult, all right? But also there were things like the Google walkout that you were alluding to, where they were like, we would like to be harassed less on the job. This feels bad. We don't like it. There were employees organizing to stop selling technology to autocrats and saying, you said we shouldn't be evil. Let's actually do that and not sell to these assholes. And you can really sort of see that the radicalization of these tech CEOs comes out of that, out of the revolt of their immediate PMC subordinates being like, no, I'm a worker too, man. Like, and I don't want this. I'm against you on this one. And they just kind of fucking flipped out. The classic example of this, I think, is Elon Musk, who very clearly sort of couldn't handle the fact that like people kept suing Tesla, being like, I got sexually harassed. Why do people keep calling me the N-word? You can look this all up. It's really, really bad.
Yeah, the race discrimination in the Tesla workforce is insane. And it's not getting a ton of publicity because he has a nutso mandatory arbitration clause. So all of these people who get sexually harassed and called the N-word at Tesla get funneled into these secret courts where, like, the house always wins.
Yeah, where Grok is the judge, jury, and executioner. Yeah, and I mean, and then 2020 happens and Musk just goes completely insane over COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
Which is also so telling. By and large, Silicon Valley companies were pretty quick and pretty early in sending people home and being like, you don't have to do this. I mean, that's not all the goodness of their heart. Part of it is that they earn money with the technologies you're using, right? Like Slack is owned by Salesforce, which is here in San Francisco. But they did. They were very, very careful about this. Many of them, not Tesla. But what happened was that the kind of tech founder that was no longer really founding anything, but mostly sort of playing tennis and like giving interviews to TechCrunch, right? Which frankly was true of Elon Musk. These are people who had made their money 20 years ago, or at least 10 years ago, and we're now kind of just like ticking down the hours before they collapse on top of their fourth wife or something like that, right? And for them, the idea that others might not need to risk their lives needlessly by exposing themselves to a virus was somehow like super offensive. They really hated this idea that like others were not going to come in and be mission-minded and committed to catching COVID in order to really deliver the best, you know, picture sharing app that you could possibly imagine. How is this not worth it to you guys? You know, sent from my iPhone on the golf course. Yeah.
As a little girl, I always knew what I wanted to do was create shareholder value, right? Like, it's this idea that there are values besides and potentially even greater than making money is like profoundly offensive to some of these people.
Yeah. Even though, weirdly enough, I think that this radicalization has taken them away from shareholder value and has taken them away from wanting to make money, right? This is also the era in which these billionaires, especially the absolutely mega rich billionaires, I can't believe we're saying mega rich billionaires, but like, you know what I mean, like the billionaire billionaires.
The ones in the hundreds of billions, as opposed to those little humble mom and pop billionaires who only have, say, $7 billion. No, I know what you mean. And this is the kind of vulgar absurdity with which you have to talk about these people.
Yeah.
It's just like the parodic moral rot of our time requires us to concoct these phrases like the super billionaires. But like you're talking about the people who wind up taking this resentment and the sort of moral and political stances that that resentment led them to into not just their workplaces and not just like their billboard choices along Highway 101, but actually into like some quite malignant political interventions, as in the case, of course, of Mr. Musk.
Yeah. But also like into places where it really leaves behind kind of CEO territory and enters like pharaoh territory, frankly, right?
Right, right. These people have so much money that they're not just impacting the businesses they technically own, right? They're impacting whole industries with a tweet.
Well, but also they buy companies seemingly with the express idea of destroying them. You know, like why does Jeff Bezos own the Washington Post? He doesn't appear to be good at it. He doesn't appear to be interested in it. So like, what's going on? Like you just got tired of reading someone else's opinions in the newspaper. Like, what if it was all me? I mean, for me, the best example of that is the metaverse, right? Like, I think people within Facebook knew that the metaverse was an enormous money sink that was never going to catch on fairly early on. But they helped their pharaoh build this pyramid because that's what Pharaoh wanted. And like, you know, you like only get one divine being at a time. So build him this weird tomb and be like, well, fuck it. Like, I guess Mark really likes it.
Okay. So what I was thinking was that this pivot to domination and inevitability that we've seen in the tech industry's new stance over the past 5 years or so was something you could really see in the tech oligarchs, like personal right-wing shifts, their personal investment in Trumpism and support for him. And then in things like Doge, right? Where like the notion that the world should revolve around the displays of domination and violence by and deference to like one guy is obviously a part of Trumpism. And then like Elon Musk took that into this vast bureaucratic project where he just slashed and burned and caused a lot of damage. But you're saying it's also like now affecting the way they run their companies and indeed maybe the economy more broadly, right? Like the metaverse was a project kind of just for nobody but Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
And the Washington Post now, especially over the past few years, under Jeff Bezos's ownership, has become a paper designed to be read by nobody but Jeff Bezos, right?
Yeah. And X is a company that has become just a cabinet of mirrors for its owner. It's never going to make that money back that he invested in it. And no one gave him that money thinking that it would. This is just extractive. Like, it's just there for him to feel less lonely. It's Versailles. X is Versailles.
So I think what we're really seeing is this shift of our whole economy and increasingly our government to just being about like really a vanishingly few number of people.
I think that's right. And I mean, I think that's how governance under Trump has been. This is something that maybe people outside of the Bay Area didn't notice as much. But late last summer, it looked like ICE was going to descend upon San Francisco the way it ended up descending upon Minneapolis.
Yeah, it was scary.
And that was averted. There were a couple of ICE forward commands sort of deployed on an island off of Alameda.
And they got fucking beat up in the street with people trying to keep them from crossing the like little land bridge from that island into Oakland proper, right? There was resistance in the Bay Area to our city's great credit. Yeah.
But what ended up happening is that instead, ICE went to Minneapolis. ICE withdrew, basically, from this operation. And the reason it did so was, it seems, that tech CEOs prevailed on Trump to spare the Bay Area, right?
It was a Salesforce guy, right?
It was probably Mark Benioff. Yeah. But it was also probably our billionaire mayor, Daniel Lurie, right? Like, so this was a kind of political decision that was ostentatiously made over the heads of both those ICE agents and the people resisting them valiantly in the East Bay. It was made between billionaires. This is something closer to the way I would say monarchs interact, right? Politics is happening between the heads of these groups.
Right. It didn't matter what the law was. It didn't matter what the actual security or like public safety issue in San Francisco was, which I assure you the like immigrant community here is not the problem. It didn't matter what the people wanted. It mattered that a rich guy made a phone call.
Yeah. And it's very clear that that's the kind of thing that Trump responds to, right? He kind of solicits that kind of governance. But it also is the way that tech CEOs are starting to think. They think of themselves in the terms of you know, noted Silicon Valley creep that we'll have to do an episode at some point, Curtis Yarwin's sort of sense of corporate fiefdoms, right? These are corporate lords, manorial corporate lords who said like, please don't invade my domain. This is actually mine, Donald, and I will bend the knee if you don't send your goons here. Politics becomes a communication between the few, but more importantly, the few want you to notice that you don't factor, that you don't matter, that you don't rank in their communication, in their power plays, right? And it's really noticeable that AI is the way that that's made aesthetic, that that's made obvious, that that's brought into people's lives. But that's not really about the technology and what it can and can't do. It's about what the people who make that technology and who embrace that technology really want to do with politics in the West, in democratic societies and worldwide.
Adrian, I think that might be a good place to end it.
Yeah, yeah.
I always learn so much from you. This was a banger. This was an Adrian Daub classic. I hope our listeners had as much fun as I did. Rate and review us on iTunes. Unless you are going to be mean to us, in which place, please don't do that.
Yeah, if you're Curtis Yarwin, just don't do it, man.
Follow us on Patreon. We're having so much fun on the Patreon. We have like a really nice community there that I've like come to really treasure. So join us on Patreon. Tell all your friends. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time on In Bed With The Right. In Bed With The Right is made possible by hundreds of listeners who support us via patreon.com. Our episodes are produced and edited by Mark Yoshizumi and Katie Lau. Our title music is by Katie Lau.